This is The Best of Our Knowledge, a presentation of National Productions.
Every year, the Lumina Foundation, a national organization that monitors post-secondary education and works towards increasing the number of Americans with college degrees, releases a report on just how many students have gotten that piece of paper. The report for 2016 has just been released.
We're continuing to see slow but steady progress in the number of Americans who hold high-quality credentials beyond high school.
Today on The Best of Our Knowledge, we'll talk to the president of the Lumina Foundation about their goals and how they plan to get there. We'll also head to the capital of Rwanda and meet a teacher who is changing lives through technology. And we'll spend an academic minute with scientists saving lives through technology. I'm Bob Barrett, and this is The Best of Our Knowledge. We've been hearing this for years. Getting a high school diploma is no longer enough to ensure success in business and the growing information economy. That's not to say that everybody needs to get a 4 or even a 2-year college degree, but some form of post-secondary education can go a long way as a student heads out into the workforce. The Lumina Foundation has released its annual report called A Stronger Nation, which looks at how many students are getting degrees or certificates after leaving high school. The foundation has a strategic plan called Goal 2025, which is working towards raising that number to 60% of students by the year 2025. Here to talk about this year's report is Jamie Mirasotis, the president and CEO of the Lumina Foundation. And first, I asked him to talk about the foundation and its goal.
Yeah, Lumina Foundation is the nation's largest private foundation focused on post-high school education and training. We believe that 60% of Americans should have a high-quality post-secondary degree, certificate, or other credential. And 60% is really the requirement that we would need in order to be able to achieve our workforce goals. Two-thirds of all the jobs being created today require a post-high school education. And it's actually what our chief international competitors, countries like South Korea and Canada, are already achieving.
Now, you've just released a report called A Stronger Nation. How many years have you been releasing this report?
We've done the Stronger Nation report since 2008, and each year we've been tracking progress on post-secondary educational attainment, trying to see how well the country is doing in terms of improving the post-secondary attainment rates. And the good news is that we're continuing to see slow but steady progress in the number of Americans who hold high-quality credentials beyond high school. The challenge is that in order to get to that 60% goal, we'll need to go faster, further, in order to be able to get there.
And a change in the report this year, you've added certificates as well as degrees. Has that helped the numbers?
Well, you know, we've always believed that post-high school education at all levels is important. We have only been able to understand degrees until this year. In other words, the data systems have only allowed us to count associate degrees and higher until this past year. This year, we were actually able to do a unique national study using the same approach that the U.S. government uses to collect data through the census, to collect information on high-quality post-secondary certificates. Because there are people who get certificates in various fields, whether it's in air conditioning repair or in the healthcare fields or in a variety of different contexts like in auto mechanics. And many of those are high-quality certificates that actually add value to the person in terms of their wages and quality of life. So we wanted to capture those. We were able to do that this year. So this year we know for the first time that 4.9% of Americans hold a high-quality post-secondary certificate. And when you add that to the percentage of Americans who hold a college degree, which is 40.4%, we now get to 45.3% of all Americans hold a high-quality post-secondary degree or certificate. And we think that that's good, but obviously not close to the 60% level that we need to get to by 2025. And that's why we think more progress needs to be made and significant changes need to be made in the post-secondary education system.
Just looking at the report around the states, are there states that are doing pretty good towards that goal?
Yeah, indeed. There are some states that have made significant progress. States like Massachusetts, Colorado, and Connecticut are near the top. They're above 50%. And unfortunately, there are some states that are well below the average. States like West Virginia, Nevada, and Mississippi are significantly below 40%. So there's wide variation across the country by state, and indeed within states across county and community. And so what we're recognizing is that the national phenomenon, the national need to increase post-secondary attainment, is critical because of our labor market and social needs. But at the same time, we need to develop increasingly local strategies in order to be able to get to that goal, because there's so much differentiation across communities and states.
And if you take a look at the states that are doing well with or poorly with degrees, are those the same states that have, you know, substandard school systems?
Well, you know, states like Massachusetts and Colorado, for example, have done a good job of making post-secondary education a priority. You know, one of the first things we think that states need to do is be clear about what their goals are and to actually make post-secondary education a priority. Some people say that the connection between that and the labor market demand is what drives the post-secondary attainment, but there's also a culture in a lot of these states, an expectation that people will go to college or will get some type of post-high school education. In other states, states like West Virginia and Mississippi and Alabama, Nevada, those kind of states, there's less of a culture of college going, and yet there is demand for people with post-secondary credentials given the current labor market needs. The reality, though, no matter what state you're in the United States, is that in the knowledge economy, the percentage of jobs that require post-high school education is growing, and our ability to meet that rising demand for talent is really what's going to make us prosperous, make us successful here in the 21st century.
What would the foundation like to see done? What are the priorities that you think would help get these numbers up?
Well, we think there are several things that need to be done in terms of redesigning the post-secondary education learning system. Certainly, we need to change the delivery model. Too few students get through the system who start, and not enough of those who complete have knowledge, skills, and abilities, talent that makes them successful in work and in life. So there's a significant movement now in higher education towards competency-based learning, where college degrees are actually represented by proficiencies or competencies that people have rather than simply an accumulation of credit hours. And if you match that, this increasing understanding of what the degrees or other credentials actually mean, with an approach that recognizes that affordability is a significant problem for many Americans, the rising price of college being a significant challenge, we think we can actually get more people through the system with this competency-based approach at a lower cost. That's good for the individuals, but it's also good for the American economy, because we're going to have more people engaged, more people actually getting through the system, powering our economy, strengthening our democracy, but not at the increasingly unaffordable levels that have risen in terms of student debt levels, in terms of challenging people with whether or not they can actually go to college at all. Those kinds of things we think would be addressed with some of these system redesign elements.
Do you think the current growth of online learning is one of the answers?
Yeah, technology, I think, is one of the solutions, but not the only solution to changing the delivery model. If you look at colleges and universities that have improved their success rates, for example, they've approached this through what they call blended learning. In other words, they use both technology and traditional methods in order to help people be more successful, get through the system more rapidly. And there are wholly online programs that have been developed, particularly those that are competency-based, such as those that are being managed now by Southern New Hampshire University, Western Governors University, and some others. Those approaches, we think, have very significant value and great potential in terms of changing that delivery model. But they're still fairly small right now. They are not the main part of the system. And we think we're going to see growth in those in the next several years.
I know one of the problems with universities and colleges is retention of students, keeping freshmen in for their sophomore year. Is that something that that universities are going to have to really work harder on?
Yeah, the retention of students, their progression beyond the first year towards the second, third, and fourth years on the path to a bachelor's degree is really important. And, you know, what we've learned from many decades of research is that there's a combination of factors that are academic, financial, and social that come together and impede students' progress in order to be able to get through college. So the colleges and universities that are most successful in retaining and graduating students are those that recognize that the academic and the financial and the social factors are co-equals. In other words, they are actually things that they need to approach with a combination of counseling, the right kind of financial support, the right kind of academic tutoring and other approaches that can help those students be successful. Students are reflective of American society. Our society is increasingly complex, and we need to address the issues that those students are facing both before they get to college as well as when they're in college in order to help them be successful and actually get that degree, help them be more prosperous, more successful in life.
Well, businesses are calling for people with degrees, and of course the Lumina Foundation sees the importance of this. Do governments and the public at large see the importance of it?
You know, there's a pretty significant public understanding that getting a college degree is important, or some post-secondary credential is important. National polling data from Gallup that Lumina Foundation has done, for example, show there's a very high value associated with post-secondary education. Actually, broadly, there's very high value. The majority of Americans believe that getting a college degree is very important. But it's even higher among minority populations, African Americans and Latinos, who recognize a college degree as a pathway to success. So I think that's a very good thing. Both government and individuals, though, are challenged by the fact that the rising price of college has made the financial pressures pretty significant. And that's where I think this strategic approach where we recognize that individuals have a role, students and their families, government has a role, but the private sector also has a role, I think, is important. And, you know, here we see businesses increasingly investing in the post-secondary education of their employees, companies like Fiat Chrysler and Starbucks, and many others have now invested in tuition assistance programs. In fact, a new study that we just released showed that Cigna Corporation, a Fortune 90 healthcare company, actually has gotten a significant return on its investment in its tuition assistance program. And I literally mean the bottom line for the company. In Cigna's case, for every dollar that they invest in tuition assistance for their employees, they get that dollar back plus another $1.29 in actual talent management savings. And they do that because the employees who participate in these tuition assistance programs are retained at higher levels, they're promoted more rapidly, and they're actually transferred in lateral moves within the company at a more significant rate. That reduces the talent management cost for the company. So there is literally an increased bottom line for companies like Cigna. And in Cigna's case, and we're doing studies with other companies in other sectors right now, in Cigna's case, as a result of what they found with this study, they increase their investment in tuition assistance. They recognize this is a good bottom line investment for them as a company.
Well, take a look ahead to 2025. Is the path open?
You know, we are confident that we can get to the 60% level that the country needs by 2025, but we will need to redesign the post-secondary education learning system. We will need to bring more of the collaborative partnership of business, government, and the private sector individuals together in order to be able to get there. But we have a lot of confidence that you can do that. But we are going to have to put our thumb on the scale of adults, many of whom were knocked out of the middle class in the last recession, and in the knowledge economy, those jobs aren't coming back. They're going to need post-secondary education. We're going to need to put our thumb on the scale of low-income and minority populations who get education at lower levels, have significantly lower levels of educational attainment. And we're going to have to think hard about the non-degree sector of post-secondary education, certificates, certifications, all of the different things that emerged, even ways to think about badges and how they might be brought together into new types of credentials. We think that there's an emerging post-secondary education ecosystem where degrees are still going to be very important, but other credentials will be increasingly important given the economy that we have in the U.S.
Jamie Marisotis is the president and CEO of the Lumina Foundation. You can read the report and learn more about the foundation at luminafoundation.org. Still to come, we'll visit an education lab in Kigali, Rwanda, where students of all ages are learning coding skills. That's next on The Best of Our Knowledge. Got any questions or comments about The Best of Our Knowledge? Send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. And if you'd like to listen to this or any past programs again, you can find them online at our flagship station's website. Just go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. And while you're there, subscribe to The Best of Our Knowledge's podcast or download the WAMC radio app to listen on demand anytime, anyplace. This is The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. Claudette Ieri is the general manager of K-Lab, a unique open technology hub in Kigali, Rwanda, where students, fresh graduates, entrepreneurs, and innovators come to work on their ideas and projects to turn them into viable business models. Claudette wants the hub to work for children, too. She's been organizing boot camps for kids during their holidays so they can start early on basic programming skills, which Claudette believes could help transform their lives in the future. For DW Radio, Daniel Enzo Habonimanda reports.
Claudette Ilele is so passionate about opening up technology for all that she's taken to teaching children in Kigali in their holidays.
So we're teaching them basic programming skills in the hope that we will be able to influence their choices, as we have specifically targeted students in ordinary level. They're between 12 and 15, and they haven't chosen their careers or their combinations yet. So we hope that this will be an eye-opener. They will want to pursue a career in coding or programming.
So the second group, because we're awarding only two groups, the second group is the Random Guiding App group. Yeah.
Claudette argues that children need technology if they want to succeed in the 21st century. Unfortunately, most children growing up in the developing world don't have access to it. Claudette and her Mozilla community team want to change this.
We started with basics. We got something from Oracle called Alice. It's a software, which is really, really basic. It is also a base for Java programming. And we're doing something along web designing as well. So we use WebMaker, a tool that Mozilla has put in place for developers. We did not want to teach them simple drag and drop things. No. They're able to go beyond the drag and drop. They could write basic HTML codes.
The idea to open up the technology hub came to her because of parental demand.
I received a number of parents coming upstairs, sixth floor, Telecom House, K-Lab, coming to ask if their children could spend their holidays at K-Lab, learning how to code.
She was worried at first because she thought that children needed special resources and she didn't feel she was able to accept the responsibility of teaching very young children. But then, after brainstorming with her colleagues, she had a brainwave.
So we started thinking, maybe we could organize something every holiday for the children so that they come over, we teach them basics, and then we're able to equip them with tools that they might need at some point in the future.
Christelle is a 15-year-old high school student among 20 children who took part in the technology boot camp. One of the objectives of this training is to develop innovative thinking. At the end of the camp, children present their projects in groups. Crystal Group came up with an app that guides tourists visiting Rwanda.
They taught us things about programming, like a program called Alice, where we can animate and make animation. We also learned Mozilla WebMaker, where we learn how to make applications. Our project is on tourists. Rwanda economy is half based on tourism. We get so many tourists in Rwanda. We want to make an application which will help tourists traveling to Rwanda, and it is called Rwanda Guide.
A number of university students are members of the Technology Hub. Along with help from Mozilla Community Funding, some university students, like Yannick, have volunteered to help teach the next generation.
In this camp, we are teaching the next generation of youth in ICT. We are preparing them with the skills they need in order to know the programming and design thinking. Currently, we are working on Mozilla AppMaker, which is a platform that helps anyone who wants to start coding.
Claudette was pleased to be giving back to the community, and having seen the success of the first round of camps, she hopes to continue the work next year too.
So what I would really want, and what we were discussing with all the facilitators, is that we don't stop here. Children we have today, we're going to bring them back next year. We're going to teach them a more advanced level. So today they did Alice. Next year they're going to do something along those lines, but more advanced. But at the same time, we're going to take a new cohort. So the ones we have, if they think that this was inspiring enough, if they really want to pursue this, we're going to call them again. And they come if they want that we continue the same thing. We want, as they grow, we grow with them. We teach them a few things here and there that will equip them if they want to be developers in the future.
For DW, this is Daniel Nzohabonimana in Kigali, Rwanda.
So we just heard about Claudette, who is changing lives through technology. But there are molecular biologists who are saving lives through advanced technologies. That's the topic of today's Academic Minute.
To beat cancer, we may want to start thinking small. I'm Dr. Lynn Pascarella, president of Mount Holyoke College. And today on the Academic Minute, Andrew Ellington, professor in the Department of Molecular Biosciences at the University of Texas at Austin, explains how microscopic machines may be the key to defeating this disease.
Imagine one day you could build machines so small and powerful that they could roam the human body looking for cancer cells and then destroy them without harming healthy cells. This is just one of many possible medical applications of nanomachines that my colleagues and I are hoping to make possible. We recently took a step in that direction by creating a nanomachine that can randomly walk in any direction across a surface coated with DNA. The walker, which is much smaller than a human cell, is made from a single piece of DNA with two legs connected by a torso. Like a human, it moves by putting one leg forward, then lifting the other leg and putting it forward. The walker autonomously and randomly decides where to put its leg on each step. This isn't the first walking nanomachine, but the others were mostly pre-programmed to follow a specific path. Our DNA walker moves randomly, which is just what you would need in a machine that is scouting for a veritable needle in a haystack, such as a small clump of cancer cells hiding among billions of healthy body cells. To be of practical use in the human body, doctors might have to inject many such nanomachines, perhaps hundreds or thousands. Indeed, one can imagine the nanomachines working together in a swarm, coordinating their actions to accomplish a task. Another interesting aspect of making DNA nanomachines is that they make decisions, and these decisions amount to a computation, similar to what an electronic computer might make. The decisions that a DNA walker makes at the nanoscale could allow us to one day diagnose, then treat cancer, control blood glucose levels in diabetics, and decide what cells to repair in patients with anemia or heart disease.
That was Andrew Ellington of the University of Texas at Austin. You can find this, other segments, and more information about the professors at academicminute.org.
The Academic Minute is a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio, in partnership with Mount Holyoke College. That's all the time we have for this week's program. If you'd like to listen again, join us online at our flagship station's website. Go to WAMC.org and click on the programs link. While you're there, subscribe to the Best of Our Knowledges podcast or any of the other National Productions podcasts. And if you have any questions or comments about the program, send them in. Our email address is knowledge@WAMC.org. I'm Bob Barrett. Be sure to join us next time for another edition of the Best of Our Knowledge.
Bob Barrett is producer of The Best of Our Knowledge. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. The Best of Our Knowledge is a production of WAMC Radio's National Productions, which is solely responsible for its content. Hear more at WAMC.org.